This is Maurice Philogene, and welcome to the Try Life On podcast. Well, you may not believe it, but I've been an actor. I've tried out for the NFL, been a street cop, federal agent. I worked my way up the military chain of command to the rank of lieutenant colonel. I was also an executive at a global consulting firm, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate in the United States. I've started developing on a Mediterranean island, and to boot, I've traveled to 100 countries over 300 times, and generally all this stuff at the same time. No, I'm not trying to be everywhere. I'm not trying to do everything. What I was trying to do, and I'm still trying to do, is to try life on, to plug into planet and earth as intended, and to fill my life book with experiences and relationships, and not just accept the status quo. So what we're going to do on this podcast is introduce you to the mindset, the skill set, the soul set, the approach that is Try Life On, and expose you to the people who've been doing it just like me, their tools, their tips, their tactics to trying life on, because we all can try life on in our own way. So sit back, relax, let's go for a ride. Let's go try life on. What up, family? Welcome back to another edition of the Try Life On podcast. It is Tuesday, April the 16th, around 12 noon East Coast time. I am in Washington, D.C. today. I'm actually getting ready to get on a plane and roll to the Mediterranean to go back to my other home, if you will, since I live in two different places. Man, you're going to like this one. How do I express this? But you ever think about Walt Disney, the founder of Disney World, Disneyland, Mickey Mouse in the 1920s, Donald Duck? You ever think that entrepreneurs, even at that caliber, go through hard times? Of course they do. Of course we do. I'm an entrepreneur. I've certainly had my failures. Fortunately, I've had a few more successes than failures. But that's the nature of Walt Disney, and we would never think about it. And when I was introduced to my guest, Jeff Barnes, I was kind of surprised. The way he talks about Walt Disney, he is one of the foremost authorities on Walt Disney and his secret to success. Jeff, back in the 1980s, took a very strong liking to Walt Disney and to understand how this man created this world for himself, how this man materialized his dream. So Jeff spent years studying not only the history of Walt Disney and what happened in his life, but more importantly, why things happened. Why things happened. Why did Walt go after this dream, especially when his peers, coworkers, friends, and neighbors all told him that it was ridiculous and not possible? Why did Walt have the fundamental belief that he should be the star of his own story and not just sit on the sidelines? As Jeff said, Walt was very active in being the engineer of his life and did not sit passively on the sideline. Jeff has been a lifelong fan of Walt Disney. He is probably the foremost authority on Walt Disney, more of an expert on Walt Disney and a fan of the theme parks. He talks to audiences, he makes keynote addresses, speaks to companies, speaks to government agencies, and he does so through the lessons, the successes and failures of Walt Disney. It is so applicable to the Try Life On concept of you have got to be the star of your own movie. You have got to go left when the herd is going right. You have got to steer away from that status quo default language that pushes us to do the versions of success that 20 to 30 years of formal education have told us. Man, Walt did not do that at all. And although we usually think about him, at least I do, think about him in the context of Walt Disney and characters and things of that nature, I never really thought about it from a life perspective and what this man must have gone through to create the world that he created and the fact that that world is now 101 years old. It's enduring. Walt actually wanted to be known as a storyteller more than anything. And that one of the things I got from this whole conversation was we got to tell the story. We've got to get people engaged in what we are doing entrepreneurially, from a family perspective, from a work perspective, from a faith perspective, from a philanthropy perspective. A lot of it should come through storytelling, hence why I do the podcast or hence why I post on social media. This was a really interesting interview and a very unexpected way of learning how someone tried life on and why they tried life on and what the drive was behind it. So much so that Jeff created a college course, trying to remember the name of the college. Now I can't remember. It was in California. But Jeff actually created a college course on the life and lessons of Walt Disney And his why was so strong that the next day after the course launched, he was actually diagnosed with a deadly brain tumor and was told to put his affairs together, get ready for surgery. He delayed it because he was so committed to his why. So he trying life on his way because he really wanted people to understand Walt Disney's life, how it's applicable to ours, and how this man had the audacity to pull off what he pulled off. And he created the greatest place on earth, right? Jeff Barnes, really, really interesting human being. I'm glad I met him. I plan on going out to California to spend some time with him. The way he talks about life, and frankly, it might seem a little bit weird to some people. Such an obsession with someone like a Walt Disney, I don't see it that way at all. I think that that is one of the most beautiful things. He found something and acted on it because he truly believed in it, which is what you guys are trying to do. You believe in something and you are trying to try life on. My man Jeff did. I have, and I hope you do too. So I hope you like this conversation with my man Jeff Barnes, one of the foremost experts on Walt Disney. His lessons, his successes, his failures, why he did what he did, and how it is so applicable to all of us. I hope you enjoy it. I feel blessed to have run into this brother. Yeah, I hope you enjoy the conversation. Thanks for listening to the Try Life On podcast as you do. And again, I'm always trying to reach more people. If you like the information, you're getting something of it, please consider giving me a 5-star review. Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to podcasts, such that it can reach more people. And as always, I am always reachable, maurice@trylifeon.com. Happy to answer any questions, get into it with you. God bless. Enjoy this conversation with my man, Jeff Barnes. What's up, Try Life On family? This is Maurice. Welcome back to another edition of the Try Life On podcast. I have my friend Jeff Barnes here, and we were just talking in the green room. And I have to tell you, I came into the green room with a certain level of enthusiasm because as I did research on Jeff and what he does and how he does it and why he does it, I thought it was a beautiful thing that I cannot wait to share. Jeff is an author and keynote speaker, totally passionate about sharing the amazing story of Mr. Walt Disney himself with others because he believes that we have a lot to learn, and I've already learned in a small amount of time, a lot to learn about his successes, his mistakes, how he approached life, and how he tried life on himself. So, Jeff, welcome to the Try Life On podcast.
Thank you, Maurice. And it's a privilege and an honor to be with you today.
I appreciate it, brother. Before we even go to my man Walt, why?
Well,
Why? I want to know about you, brother. Why are you so passionate? And it shows. I know it's your work, but it shows as a passion. Why are you so passionate about that story and that dynamic?
great question, Maurice. And I think it really goes back to my childhood. Like so many people, grew up in a dysfunctional family, broken home. The one place where I sort of felt safe and secure was at Disney, specifically Walt Disney World. I grew up in the Panhandle of Florida, and was fortunately able to get out of that dysfunction, find my own level of success, and over time, I just became passionate. What does it take to be successful? Is it external circumstances or is it internal mindset and internal choices? The very first time I ever went to Disneyland in California way back in 1988, I actually hated it because it didn't match and mirror my experience and memories from childhood at Walt Disney World in Florida. And the one thing that I've been gifted with is insatiable curiosity. And I stayed in California long enough to realize that people here absolutely love Disneyland. And so I just had to know, well, why did everyone else love it? And I didn't have such a great experience. And that's when I discovered Walt Disney wasn't born successful. He had a difficult relationship with his own father. He was bankrupt at the age of 21, had more failures than successes, and he simply didn't care. He gave us the world's most popular and profitable cartoon character, Mickey Mouse, the world's first full-length animated feature film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and the world's first story slash theme park, Disneyland. And you know, that
Wow.
idea that he could will all of that into existence and give the world something that we love and needed was just amazing to me. And the
Did you?
deeper I got, the more I realized I could share this story
Oh,
and
okay.
help people realize Disney isn't just an escape. It can be an example, and it can be the place, not where dreams come true, but the place that can show you how, Maurice, to make your own dreams come true.
I love that. Did you just naturally gravitate towards, I want to research this guy?
Yes.
Like you get so what is it about you that made you want to, it's not a normal, I don't want to say it's not a normal thing. It's a beautiful thing, right? We have so much to learn from each other, but nowadays, and maybe, you know, we're talking about late 80s, so a little bit of a different time, but nowadays, I think people are so cursory about learning about a human, the successes and the failures, what makes that person tick. Everybody's so unique. But for some reason you dove down deep. What is it about you that made you go on this journey? And then we'll get into the journey.
Yeah, great question, Maurice. It became an obsession, which I know some people are like, ooh, you know, that's a little weird. Well, be obsessed or be average. You like go all in on something. And I went all in on Walt. And it really goes back to, you know, I was fortunate in higher education. I had a, you know, earned a bachelor's degree, master's degree, PhD. I did my doctoral dissertation on narrative or story criticism. And then I discovered out of all of Walt's successes, he most wanted to be remembered as a storyteller. And in fact, that's why he built Disneyland, for the purpose of telling stories. And so my love of story and Walt's desire to be remembered as a storyteller and the manner in which he built the park to tell stories and then challenge us to go out and live our own great story, it just so aligned with what I was interested in and what I believe is necessary, you know, for us to live a much better and much more purposeful life.
I love that. And I never thought about Walt as a failure until I found you. So I'm grateful we've collided. I've had a hell of an entrepreneurial journey in real estate and restaurants. I'm developing overseas in the Mediterranean now. And the amount of failures that I have, as long as I have one success over the failures, you're okay. But you need those to get there. But you have these larger than life figures like Walt, and all you see is the manifestation of this man's blood, sweat, dreams, and fears. But he did have failures, and no one would
Absolutely.
ever think about that. So I heard you talk about, fill me in on it, but I heard you talk about the business he was doing before. Maybe it was in Kansas, but there was a bit, Griffith Park, maybe. There was a business he was
So,
doing before he had this Walt Disney idea, Disneyland idea.
yeah, so last year, 2023, was the Disney 100 celebration of the company being around for 10 decades, which is an amazing
That's
accomplishment. Yay,
unreal. Yeah.
Disney.
Yeah.
But the story that wasn't told was it was also the 100th anniversary of Walt going bankrupt with his first studio, Laugh-O-Gram Studio, in Kansas City, Missouri. And it was that bankruptcy at the ripe old age of 21, by the way, it was that bankruptcy that created the Disney empire. What do I mean by that? Well, rather than giving up, which I think is a huge temptation and what too many of us do, rather than giving up, Walt went all in on his dreams by boarding a train for California. And Maurice, he boarded that train with all of $40, a single suitcase, and a one-way ticket. He was all in on his goals, all in
No
on his.
plan, no plan B. No
Absolutely
plan
not.
B.
He was going to make it in California no matter what. He joins forces with his older brother, Roy, who was already in Los Angeles recovering from tuberculosis after World War I. Together, they found the Disney Brothers Studio that celebrated its 100th anniversary last year and today is the world's largest entertainment company. And from there, he created his first successful cartoon character, which was not Mickey Mouse, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. He loses Oswald in a distribution dispute with Universal and a fellow by the name of Charles Mintz. And that forces him, that failure forces him to come up with Mickey Mouse. And
Oh, really?
Walt would go on to say, we can never forget it all started with a mouse, which is great because we love Mickey. didn't start with a mouse. It started with a bankruptcy and the loss of Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. In other words, it started with failure. Failure just like you've experienced, failure just like I've experienced, failure just like our listeners have experienced.
Yeah.
And from there, he creates Snow White in 1937. And then he wants to build an amusement park, Disneyland, in Anaheim, California. Nobody believed, to include his own wife and his own brother. The experts thought it would fail in 6 months or less. And halfway through construction, Walt goes out to the construction site and he's scared out of his mind because half the money's gone, half the time is gone, and there's nothing that he would charge a nickel for anyone to come and see.
Meaning where the construction was at that point, there was just nothing happening that he expected to be happening.
Correct.
That's got to be damning for him.
Yeah, and it was said when Walt was building Disneyland, he did not have a friend in the world because nobody believed.
Two questions for you. The first one, the lineage. So he started, I don't know if it's an animation studio or just a studio. I don't know what they called it back then, but his first go at, let's say, this beautiful world was him creating characters. Was he in that business or was his brother in that business or it just came to him?
So Walt served as an ambulance driver at the very end of World War I with the Red Cross. And
nice.
He comes
Okay.
home and he can't figure out what he wants to do. He thinks about being an actor. He works for a little while as a, animator, not really animator, but cartoonist for an advertising company. Animation is in its infancy. And so he sort of plays around with that. The studio in Kansas City worked with a local dentist to create animation advertisements teaching children how to brush their teeth. And I often wonder, if Walt doesn't go bankrupt, does he spend the rest of his life in Kansas City and the rest of his life only ever working with a local dentist? My argument is the bankruptcy was the best thing that ever happened.
It pushed him.
Because it pushed him to go all in and to make a different decision. He comes out to California. The difference between the two studios is not Walt. The difference is Roy.
Roy's brother
kept Walt grounded and disciplined and from going off the financial physical cliff all over again. But if Walt doesn't come out to California, Roy spends the rest of his life selling vacuum cleaners door to door. So it's great that you've got your ideas. It's great that you've got your vision. It's great that you're all in and you're executing. Inevitably, you're going to need someone or someone's to come alongside you and help make your goals and your dreams possible.
I agree. And there's this notion of, like, we hear it in the self-development space. And I know you do a lot in leadership development in your own style. We all hear the word mastermind. And I actually went back to research the, no, I didn't research it. I read it in a book, Power of the Subconscious Mind, I think is where I read it, by Dr. Murphy, a 1956 book. But the mastermind was the notion of two minds with common thought processes or analogous thought processes melding together to create larger success than the sum of its parts, right?
Absolutely.
We need people. There's nothing wrong with being a solopreneur. There's nothing wrong with being an entrepreneur who's just doing stuff on his own. But if you do want to supercharge things and reach a lot of people or have a mass amount of impact, it's not easy to do that alone. Sounds like Walt got lucky with his brother.
He was very fortunate. And they would end up as partners for the rest of their lives. And Roy was 8 years older than Walt.
Yeah.
And Walt died of lung cancer in December of 1966. Roy
lung
was
cancer.
Planning to retire at that point.
Okay.
But following his younger brother's death, he puts retirement off and spends the next 5 years of his life seeing his brother's final dream and final wish through to fruition, which was Walt Disney World. They had not even broken ground in Florida when Walt Disney died in December of 1966. And then Roy would get Walt Disney World open as a tribute to his brother in October of 1971, and then he dies 2 months later.
That's heavy. Sorry, did Walt know Walt Disney World was being built? Was he aware of it?
All of that was Walt's idea.
It was Walt's idea.
It was his goal. It was his dream. It was his vision.
Okay.
And he was a part of getting the 27,440 acres purchased. That happened in, 1963 to 1965, and they announced in November of 65 that Disney was coming to Central Florida. Now, Walt Disney World is 150 times the size of Disneyland, and Walt hated sequels. He hated repeating himself. He wanted to be moving forward,
Yeah.
and he had always said there would never be another Disneyland. So Walt Disney World was never about Magic Kingdom or Disneyland 2.0. It was really about Epcot, and not the Epcot that Disney opened in 1982, but an Epcot that stood for an experimental prototype community of tomorrow. Walt wanted to get into urban planning and fix the problems of the inner city. Magic Kingdom was to serve as the resource for providing the finances to help make that city or Epcot possible.
Oh,
But then
wow.
Walt dies in December of 1966. And again, Roy comes out of retirement to get phase one, Magic Kingdom, open. And then he dies 2 months later. The night before Walt Disney died, he's laying in his hospital bed, which will be his deathbed in a few hours. Roy has stopped by to visit him, and he looks up at the ceiling tiles, lays out the property in Central Florida, and tells Roy, here's where Magic Kingdom needs to go. Here's where Epcot needs to
On his
go. Here's where the
deathbed?
monorail needs to run.
Wow. He was that committed.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I heard you say, I respect this man. The other thing I heard you say is that he was obsessed. I believe in that. There are certain things I have a mad obsession for. Like I told you, being a police officer was an obsession for me. I had to do it before I died. I just couldn't. I would have had a lot of regret, put it that way. And there's other things I have obsession for. So I respect that he did that. But you also put out that he had a why. He had a broader why. There was the park. There was his passion, but there was also this urban planning piece that's behind it, something else he wanted to do for community. I have found, I'm of course in the entrepreneurial space and you're in the leadership space or development space. I have found that highly successful people always have some kind of why that's sitting behind them on what who they want to help or a city or a jurisdiction or a people, a cause. It's a beautiful thing to see. The thing I wanted to pivot to when I said I had two things I wanted to mention, so I didn't lose my train of thought on the other one. I penned for myself over my 17-year entrepreneurial career, my core entrepreneurial years, entrepreneurial depression, meaning I was that exec during the day, street cop at night, doing real estate on the weekends, raising my oldest son at the time, raising him, and he's autistic, so that was even more of a challenge in the 2000s. There was no LinkedIn, no Instagram, no Facebook. That stuff was just starting to come around. I found myself in aisle six of the Fairfax County Library all the time because I was like, I gotta read, I gotta. But it isolates you. I think a lot of people listening to this, I have found my tribe now and I've worked on those things. So it's actually something we need to work on as humans. But a lot of people who are listening to this are on their own entrepreneurial journey or even intrapreneurial journey within the company that they work for to do something great, and they feel alone because they cannot tell people what they're doing, or they feel like there's no one who would listen. They don't have a Roy, they don't have a Jeff, they don't have a Maurice. And here you're talking about one of the greatest men in American and world history, and he was alone doing this. Can you just touch on that for folks?
Yeah, so it is sort of interesting. I had the opportunity to be a part of History Channel's upcoming series, How Disney Built America. It's going to be coming out at the end of April.
Wow.
And in doing the research for that program, it sort of just dawned on me that as much as we want to love Walt and as much as we want to sort of embrace him as this uncle who came into our living rooms on Sunday nights, vis-a-vis Wonderful World of Color or Wonderful World of Disney, at the end of the day, Walt was successful because he was disagreeable. In fact, I now refer to it as disagreeable Disney. And what I mean by that is he saw the state of the world one way, and he was obsessed about how he viewed the world and how he viewed reality. Everyone else saw it in terms of status quo and the way it's always been done and what is it versus what is not. And Walt didn't care that we had never had synchronized sound with an animation. He created Steamboat Willie anyway. He didn't care that there was no such thing as a full-length animated feature film, and people thought we wouldn't be willing to sit through a cartoon for 85 minutes.
Yeah.
He didn't care that no one believed in Disneyland. He did it anyway.
Just did it.
And so, you know, my challenge is there are people, listeners, who have an idea. And they know that it's different. They know that it's disagreeable. And they're incredibly lonely because they're not taking action on that idea. You know, Walt had this vision for a place where parents and children could have fun together while his girls, Diane and Sharon, were spinning on a merry-go-round in Griffith Park, Daddy's Day on a Saturday afternoon, way back in the 1940s. And when he shared that idea with Lily, when he shared that idea with Roy, they all said, no, we're not building an amusement park. It'll never work. Those places are filthy. Guess what? Despite the loneliness, despite the disagreeableness, Walt did it anyway. And the only way you're going to change, maybe not the world, but at least your world,
yeah,
is to get up off the park bench and start taking action. And if people disagree, it means you might well be on the right path.
I say this phrase all the time, but the typical thing that stops people, by the way, I believe adults have forgotten how to dream.
Absolutely.
I'm a dreamer.
Why go to the place where dreams come true if you stop dreaming?
We should never stop dreaming. And you know, when you start, I coach people in lifestyle design, when people start writing their perfect day and visioning about their life and dreaming of being an astronaut again, or whatever it is that they truly want to do. Not, and inevitably they give the responsible answer. What do you want to be? Well, I want to be a good dad. I want to, no, stop. Now I'm going to say, go back and dream like Walt would dream.
Yeah. Be what disagreeable.
Be disagreeable. I love that. But I wonder if you address this type of stuff in your keynote. I think people fundamentally know to be disagreeable. I will give myself credit in that I was disagreeable over my two decades because I just did shit a different way. I'm not saying it was always good, but typically if the herd was going right, I was typically going left. Not as comparison, but just for myself, right? Yep. Hence why we're here on this podcast together. But it's tough for people. This is why I say I don't blame people, because 20 to 30 years of formal education, then your family, peers, coworkers, and neighbors saying, ah, you can't do that. That's not good. It's never been done. Don't do that. It's almost like society depresses you. It pushes you down. It makes you stick in the status quo. How do we help people get from that status quo muck? So another guest called it goop, the good opinion of other people. How did he do it? How do you do it? How do you present him to people? And even for, because I know you're doing the exact same thing when I learned about you. How do people do that? Get the courage to just go?
Well, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, and that is why. It's not what you do. It's not how you do it. It's why you do it. And for me, I was in higher education for 22 years. Which is one of those systems and one of those institutions that you've been talking about. It locks people into a way of thinking, a way of believing, a way of behaving.
Yes.
And I was, as Dean of Student Success, Professor of Humanities, responsible for working and coming along aside students who weren't being successful, who weren't persisting, who weren't getting retained, who weren't graduating. And I didn't want to use the traditional academic methods for helping these students be more successful. I wanted to use what I knew students loved in Southern California. I wanted to use Disney. I wanted to use Disneyland.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so I created a very controversial course on the history of Disneyland, believed that it could make a difference in the lives of students, finally got permission for it, gave the first lecture, and then the very next day, Maurice was diagnosed with a life-threatening brain tumor.
You were?
Yes. And they wanted to operate immediately. They told me I had the weekend to get my affairs in order and that I needed to come back on Tuesday for surgery. And because of the invasiveness of the surgery, I was going to be out of work for 2 months. Well, the college course on the history of Disneyland was never about the amusement park. was about obstacles. It was about adversity. It was about what it takes to see your own goals and your own dreams come true. This was a chance for me to not just teach the course. It was a chance for me to live
it.
The course, because I was like Walt back in Kansas City, boarding the train, all in, $40, single suitcase, one way ticket. And so you have got to board the train when it comes to your why. And once you board the train and you're 100% in and you make that decision, when the inevitable obstacles show up in your life, you'll know what to do because you've already decided. I put the surgery off. Spoiler alert, I lived. I put the surgery off for 2.5 months to teach the course because I had decided months and years prior that this is who I was, this was what I was going to do, and it could make a difference in the lives of the students.
You put off a potentially, I'm conscious of time, you put off a potentially life-saving operation because you were that committed to your why.
Correct.
I hope people pick that up. And I want to back that up by saying, although I was making six figures in corporate, when I went to go be a police officer in the middle of the night, it was because I had a why. It had nothing to do with, oh, I want to look cool, or I want to tell people I carry a weapon or something. I wanted to serve that community, but in a very quiet way that nobody knew. Like here I was, corporate exec guy, real estate guy, speak four languages, but I'm just patrolling with the people. It really mattered. But I have to echo something you said, and now that I respect about Walt, which is we have to make the conscious choice to be the star of our own movie. If we're not, and if we default, that's what status quo is, we're defaulting. If we default to being a featured extra or just a regular extra in our own movie, that's where the number one problem from my perspective about life comes into play, which is regret.
Yep. No, we can't be passive spectators in our that's own it. Life. We have to be active participants. Let me share with you a fun fact from Disneyland history. When the park opened July 17th, 1955, again, it opened for the purpose of telling stories. We had 2,000 amusement parks in the 1950s across the United States.
Yeah.
They only engaged us physically. They didn't engage us mentally. They didn't spark our imagination. They didn't tell stories. Mm-hmm. Walt built a park that told stories. Mm-hmm. The best stories were in the Fantasyland dark rides. Come out to California, Maurice. We'll give you a tour. And you can still ride Snow White's Scary Adventures, Peter Pan's Flight, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. And as much as guests loved Disneyland and they loved those stories in Fantasyland, they were also very confused because when they rode Snow White, when they rode Peter Pan, when they rode Mr. Toad, they were looking for the heroes, for the lead characters in those stories, in those rides, in those attractions. They weren't there. Well, intentionally left them out. Because his expectation was when you ride Snow White, when you ride Peter Pan, when you ride Mr. Toad, you as the guest get to be the lead.
You are you that as person.
The guests get to be the hero. And the guests didn't understand that. Often they would go to City Hall and whine, moan, and complain to the point that when Disney renovated Fantasyland in 1983, they put the heroes and the lead characters into those stories and into those attractions for the first time, which was great for fixing Fantasyland. My challenge to you and to our listeners today is to stop looking for the hero and be
the hero.
The hero. You cannot be a passive spectator in your own story and in your own life.
Well, my man, you just nailed it. We can't be passive. That's the whole point of this podcast, is to shake people a bit so that they to give people the incentive, the motivation, or even the excuse. Who cares?
Yeah.
Go live. And I say, I mean, you're a great example, by the way. You were diagnosed with that condition. I'm glad you're okay, man. I wanted to say that before. We have 28,000 days in the average 80-year lifespan. That's all we got. In the average 80. Hopefully, you know, we'll make it to 100, 105, whatever. But the average lifespan in the world is 80. That's 28,000 days. I'm 48. I have 11,315 or less left.
Wow.
I don't have time to sit as a spectator on the sideline. Hence what you and I were talking about in the green room of being in DC, going living in the Mediterranean, being a street cop, doing this. You chasing your why of, I found this subject matter that is enthralling. And now I want to impart it on people who would never have an idea, aka Maurice. Because once I started researching, I was like, what is this? And look what you're doing to share people his story, what he did. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And especially Walt as a pinnacle of trying life on himself. I do have a gee whiz question for you, just as we wrap up. Maybe two questions. One, what happened to Oswald the Rabbit? That's the
Oh,
first
great
question.
question.
And then two, tell us something about Walt. No, not even Walt. Maybe one thing about his characters that we just would know. Like, I didn't know Oswald the Rabbit existed, so now I'm gonna look him up. But the first thing, what happened to Oswald the Rabbit? Where did it go?
So, Universal owned the rights to Oswald
Yeah.
and took him away in a meeting that Walt and his wife Lily had in New York back in March of 1928. And Walt was looking for a bigger and better contract. Universal told him no, and then they held on to the rights and held on to those rights and basically held Oswald hostage for the next 80 years. Fast forward to
Oh.
2005, and Universal, which is now owned by NBC, gets the rights to Sunday Night Football, and they covet a broadcaster by the name of Al Michaels.
Yeah.
Well, Al Michaels just happens to be under contract with ABC. ABC is owned by guess whom? Disney.
Disney, they
So
flipped
when
it.
NBC goes to ABC and says, we have the rights to Sunday Night Football, we would really like to use Al Michaels as our broadcaster. How can we work this out? ABC slash Disney goes back to NBC slash Universal and says, no problem. We want Oswald back. And so Al Michaels was traded for
Gangsta
a cartoon
move.
character. And so
Gangsta.
today, when you walk into Disneyland's second gate or second park, Disney's California Adventure, you're walking down Buena Vista Street, which tells the story of Walt arriving in California in 1923, all the way down to the Carthay Theater and the
Yeah.
premiere of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in 1937. To your
Yeah.
left is Oswald's Garage. To your right is Mortimer's Market, which was the original name Walt had for Mickey until his wife Lily said, no, Mortimer is off. We'll go with Mickey instead. The only reason Oswald's Garage can even be there is
Yeah.
because Disney got the rights back in 2005 when they traded Al Michaels.
That's crazy. They traded a cartoon character for a human and
Yep.
probably, but they both have value in very different ways.
Yep.
Yeah, just last question. Anything that you can think about of a character that the general public just, I mean, that was one of them, but another character that the general public just wouldn't know.
Yeah, so we're familiar with Mickey Mouse. We love the Disney characters, right? We all connect
Yeah.
with them in some
Yeah,
form
man.
or some fashion. Donald Duck was created in the middle of the 1930s. And to put all of this into perspective, Mickey premieres via Steamboat Willie, November of 1928. He's this indomitable spirit. He's Walt Disney's alter, or like what I like to say, Walter ego. And the stock market crashes and the world is plummeted into the Great Depression 11 months later. Mickey and his indomitable spirit gets us through that terrible time. And Walt is one of the few people in the country, if not the world, making money because of the success of Mickey Mouse. However, Mickey was limited. People had him in a box in terms of who he was, what his personality was like, what he could do. And they had to come up with sort of a foil, if you will. And that's how Donald Duck was created.
Oh, he was a reaction to trying to get more expansive.
Correct. And
Wow.
so if you identify with Mickey and you kind of wonder what this Donald Duck character is all about, that's why. But if you identify with Donald Duck and you can't figure out, what Mickey is about, again, that's why, because as human beings,
Wow.
we have a range of emotions. Meet as many different people as you can.
Yeah.
And Donald is an example of the importance of having different people, different personalities, different characters in your life and in your world.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'm a Donald fan. I think I resonate more with Donald than I do Mickey, just because he's squirrely. Mickey has his shit together. Donald does. Donald does, but he doesn't. You know what I mean? He's kind of
Correct. Well,
that thing
and
of a
Donald thinks he does, But he does it and gets frustrated when things don't end well and has sort of, you know, no clue about, you know, why he's in the situation that he's in.
I love it. And I had no clue about Walt. I had no clue about the story. I have been to Disney World. I have been to Euro Disney.
Wow.
I've never been to Disneyland, but I will now.
Well, come see us. We'll give you a tour.
Man, I'll be in touch with you, brother. I appreciate you. I know you have to run. This was fat. You honored me by teaching me something, and I know you're going to teach a lot of other people something. Teach a lot of other people something as well. I just want to say thank you for joining the podcast, man, and please keep doing the authentic work you are doing. It is just not only needed, but it is a joy.
All right. Well, thank you, Maurice, and to you and all of the listeners, never stop dreaming.
Absolutely. All right. Take care, Jeff. Hey guys, this is Maurice, host of the Try Life On podcast, and thank you for listening to another episode. I hope you are finding it useful in helping you design your own lifestyle that you don't need a vacation from. If that's the case, please consider dropping a review for me, whether in Apple, iTunes, or in Spotify. Drop a review, put some stars on it, give me some feedback on how I can make the podcast better, what information you are looking for. I am doing my best to get information to you on the Try Life On principles, the five freedoms, how to build lifestyle, travel hacking, all of it. And I want to do it for you. So please do a review for me. And until next time, my name is Maurice Philogene, and this is the Try Life On podcast. Peace.